Hello, fellow travelers, and welcome to the Diversion of the Stars podcast. How are my loyal listeners? Thank you for your continued support. And as always, hit the subscribe button, everybody. We have a wicked good show for everybody because born the mothership is Joel Stopher. You know him as Enoch in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. He now plays Wayne Munson in Stranger Things Season 4. Now come join me as we go traversing the stars. Hello, Mr. Stopher. Thank you so much for coming to the Diversion of the Stars podcast.
Well, thank you for having me.
Totally my pleasure, sir. I really loved what you did in Stranger Things. I'm looking forward to talking with you.
Cool. Yeah.
So I always start off with the question of inspiration. So what inspired your love for acting and who were your earliest influences?
Earliest influences. I watched a lot of films when I was a kid because we had the Z Channel, which I don't know if you're familiar with the Z Channel. It was basically like the first home movie, TV connection. And it was this box that was tied to the TV with a cord, and it had a string of buttons, and the first one on the list was the Z Channel, number one. And like every week they would release like a relatively current movie, something that had been released within the last 6 months or a year. And so I got to watch all kinds of movies as a kid that I probably shouldn't have seen. One of the biggest was definitely, Scorsese and De Niro in Mean Streets, films like Cuckoo's Nest and Clockwork Orange. Probably shouldn't have seen that. I was taking all this stuff in and it really affected me, I think, ultimately in a positive way. I was able to kind of, digest what I was seeing, and I was more fascinated by the art that was taking place, even at a young age, at age 10 or whatever I was, some of those, and then just getting to do theater from a young age at school. And I got to go to school with some pretty talented people who were older than me. And I was very inspired by some of what I saw at that time.
So at that age, that early age of starting to already act, and you said in those like school theaters, things of that nature, did you already get training? Was this just pure instinct you were using?
Yeah, I would call it mostly instinct. There hadn't been any training. I took a theater class when I was in seventh and eighth grade. So, and we got to just sort of have fun and explore. It wasn't like what I would call a formal training of any kind, but certainly, gave me the license to just be free on stage and kind of do what came naturally to me. So I was a place where I could get past my own fears and inhibitions being on screen, on stage. And, whereas I think in life outside of the stage, I was definitely shy and more intimidated by the social world around me.
So what was it about being on that stage that fired you up and thought to yourself, I am doing this for my life?
It was just a feeling that I had, being there, I was able to focus in a way that I didn't feel like I could day to day or in other situations. Like it just brought me into a place of clarity, and I was able to have a character and portray someone, and even as a little kid, and say the lines, and I challenged myself to be as credible as I could be with those lines and really discern the difference between what I called at the time, like faking it as opposed to like being real, and I was, it's like, I kind of learned that, and I felt like, whether or not I was doing it, I don't know, but I challenged myself in that way. And I think I wanted to pursue that as much as I could. Yeah, it definitely helped me get a grasp on it.
I like that already at that age, you already had a theory of acting, like what is fake, what is real. I really like that early age, you already knew what was you were doing.
for what that's worth. I mean, I don't know.
Now, when you graduated from high school, did you pursue acting in schools, academics, things of that nature, or did you go right to auditioning?
No, I did. I had applied to college for theater, and I ended up going to Bard College in upstate New York. And I was doing a play professionally. I mean, only because I was with older actors who were professional. I would not have considered myself a professional, but I was getting some great response from casting and from agents who wanted to meet with me. But I had already committed. It was like the summer before I was leaving to go to college, and I had a choice to make about, you know, staying in LA and, you know, signing with an agent and like maybe having, you know, getting work. And, you know, I that's a big question mark in my life. You know, like had I gone that way with, you know, some of the attention that I was getting at that time and really pursued that, you know, but I was really committed to going to school and learning the craft and taking that aspect of it seriously. And, you know, I think ultimately that I definitely benefited from that experience as well. And I have no regrets about it, but I, you know, it's always a question, you know, Yeah, it was an interesting time.
now, how when you were thinking about doing that and dedicating yourself to acting, going to school for it, how big of a risk was that? Was that something that you were backed 100% by like your parents or whatever, or was it something along the lines where you were thinking about backup plans?
It was a big risk for sure. I have been fortunate enough, you know, at the time my family was able to support me, and I think about this all the time because, you know, I've been able to stay in this business and have this career only because I've had mostly emotional support, but occasionally like financial support, and I've been really fortunate. I know there are so many actors out there who haven't had that backup, and I've had my plan B, you know, like pay the bills kind of career on the side, and had to do that most of the time because acting, you know, jobs were few and far between. So I was able to pay my bills, but if things got really tight, I could get a little help. And that allowed me to stay in this business and pursue it and continue to get work when I did and reach certain milestones. And I know that it's a privilege that I'm very much aware of, for sure.
So obviously when you're in seventh and eighth grade, you definitely had an idea of acting, what it was, when you wanted it to be. Now, when you went to college, what things that you thought about were you thought, wow, I had no idea what I was talking about, or were the things that were like, yeah, I was on the right track even back then on what the acting was supposed to be or what I would be as an actor?
So you're saying like did I have doubts about, you know, get the field that I was going into?
So yeah, so when you're like almost like when you're seventh, eighth grade, you're actually like I said, you had a, seemed like you had a definite idea of what acting would be or should be. Yeah. Now, when you moved into acting classes, how much of it was proven correct? Was there stuff that you thought to yourself, oh man, I was totally off on this or that idea?
I see. I think I still experience those feelings. I mean, acting is kind of like this, it's this, for me, it's this ever evolving beast. I mean, certainly there are certain, you know, aspects of it, certain techniques that you learn that, you know, you can go to help you find your way through a script and break a script down and do all that. But in terms of like, getting, you know, back to that idea of like what's real, you know, in terms of finding that being in the moment, I mean, it's for me, it seems like it's, you know, you think you have an answer to what that is, as I have thought over the years every time. And then it doesn't always work the same way the next time I do it. And so I have to rediscover my way back into whatever that is. And so I think it's important to always keep it alive and keep it moving and find new answers to, you know, what you think, you know, like just be paying attention to that.
Worked. I mean, it was successful because prior to even Stranger Things, you became very well known as Enoch in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., which is the Marvel TV show, which was very successful. So what was that experience like for you?
That was just fantastic. I mean, it was the gift that kept on giving, you know, because they hired me, you know, at the end of season four. They just offered me the role and they didn't know exactly where it was going to go. They weren't even sure if they were going to have a season five. And they said, if they did, they might need me for a couple episodes. And I was like, okay, great. And, you know, it was this silhouetted character in that last episode of season four that was, I didn't have a name or anything. And I was like, you know, sometimes it's a thankless job, but it was, I was happy to just have somebody offer me a role. And so, you know, when I read, after they got picked up for season five and I read the script for the first episode, I didn't even know what my character name was. They still hadn't given me any real information. I don't even really think they knew. I got a little more information, but like I discovered that I was this alien creature, which I didn't know at the end of season four. But I started reading this opening moment of episode one in season five, and I was like, wow, this is a really cool intro. I wonder who this character is. I had no idea. And I finally got through and I was like, I think that's supposed to be me. It kind of felt like that for like the whole run, like all through, because they kept like, you know, finding new ways. It was this great symbiosis that took place between me and the writers. Like they kept giving me amazing stuff to play with, and I kept giving them things that inspired them to write more, and they wanted to keep me on. And it like sometimes it works that way. It was not a part of the ultimate plan. I think it just sort of played out that way as we went along.
So the cool thing about Enoch is that he's 1,000 years old. He's a synthetic being, or at least partially a synthetic being.
32,000
to be exact, 32,000. So both aspects of that being 32,000 years old and being synthetic is definitely outside normal human experience, I assume. I mean, I don't know, maybe there's a 30,000 year old man walking around, but chances are it's outside normal experience.
Yeah.
So how do you access a character that exists so far out of what would be considered the norm for us?
You know, it's interesting because it definitely evolved. I mean, if you watch those early episodes of, like, you know, 501, I was discovering, you know, episode to episode, I was figuring out who this guy was. It definitely was not, I didn't like know this character from day one. It was not like that. I had an arc, and by the end of season seven, like I actually looked at it recently because I was putting, you know, together a new reel. And so I looked at stuff from season five and I looked at stuff from season seven and season six. And I just watched this sort of evolution of who Enoch was. It's subtle changes. I don't know that everybody would know it, but for me, it was like, wow, I came a long way from the end of to the end of season seven. But I have to say, you know, I was very much inspired by the guys who did it before me, you know, Brent Spiner and Leonard Nimoy. I mean, you know, they really were like the first to kind of like have a handle on what the alien, like the solemn alien guy is all about. And I didn't copy them per se, but I think that without what they have done, it would have been harder for me to get to it. And I have to give them some credit.
So if they hadn't told you ahead of, let's say they had known that, you know, in 501, where they're going to be in season seven, everything else, do you think you would have been any changes to your portrayal if you had been able to plan ahead the arc?
I don't know. Hard to say. I mean, I don't know that I would have been able to plan. I mean, even with that knowledge, you know, you kind of, you know, you get each script, you get like a week in advance before you shoot. And so there's no real like way of knowing exactly where you're going to be going. You just have to be prepared to, you know, to find it. I was so grateful when, you know, to get the death scene at the end of, you know, 709, and like what an amazing way to go out.
Yeah.
And the fact that they wrote that for this character and that they showed that much appreciation for, you know, what I brought to the show was huge for me. And so that was a really, you know, just a wonderful way to, you know, to end that. And I was not prepared for that until like literally 2 weeks before we shot, you know, like they said, oh yeah, we're going to kill you off in episode 9. I was like, okay, see where that goes.
And I mean, that monologue is very impressive. It's about loneliness and death. And it's pretty cool. You can literally Google on YouTube, Enoch Mono, and it's one of the things that pops up, that whole scene. It's so well done. How difficult of a scene was that to shoot? And what is it like when you're given this great, well-written monologue and just be able to sink your teeth into it?
What's really cool about when it's so well-written is you can trust it a lot more. And you know that you don't have to try to, you know, force anything. You know, you don't have to try to like create something that you know you think might not be there, and that ends up coming off as pushed. Mm. And so I just trusted the words, and I trusted the history that I had with, because I'm talking about, you know, these agents and that the relationship I had with them that I developed that was all real. I mean, that happened for me, you know. I got to know these people over the course of 3 years. So I just brought, you know, a lot of emotion to it and trusted the words. And I mean, they drew, you know, Greenberg just made such an amazing, some amazing choices for me, you know, the way that he wrote that.
Well, I mean, the thing that I think is fascinating about that scene is that here's a 32,000 year old entity that's for the first time now facing death, which, I mean, even for an entity like us that lives, you know, maybe 70, 80 years, 32,000 is a long time to not even have to consider it. So,
right.
like, so what were you thinking about when you thought, try to get into the headspace of this character, and how would he approach the sudden realization after all those years?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, I mean, the choice that I made, because they also killed me off in season 5 too, you know, and then because that happened in the future, and then they were able to get back to, you know, I had a new life, I had a second chance, yeah. but I sacrificed myself in, I think it's episode 10, I can't remember, in season 5, and so what it really is, you know, I'm this chronicom, death is not. Or I guess, you know, I've come to understand that life is very precious for all creatures in the universe, but especially for humans. And so for me as a chronicom, there's less of that emotional attachment to existence. And so I just played it as, oh, well, the logical thing to do here, if I have to sacrifice myself in order to save these people, I'll just do that. And it's okay. And so like in episode 5 or in season 5, when I go through it, it's less of a concern. It's just like, oh yeah, I'm doing this. I'm sorry that you might, you know, I'm talking to Jeff as well in that scene. And his character potentially is going to die in that moment. And I'm sad about that. But then in season 7, in 709, he's had enough experience with these people that somehow it's tapped into some chronicom emotional spot. So it became a more emotional process, the experience of loneliness and fear of of being lonely and, you know, all of that. It was really fun to play that and walk that line of, you know, emotion and logic and, you know, like have some kind of feeling there without being human. It was fun. It was fun. That was it for me. It was just, I had a blast doing it.
I mean, it must have been a hard line to walk. I mean, as you said, you're playing alien, you're going to show some human emotion, but you can't cheat, as it were, and make it totally human. And you know, say you can't, you still got to accept that the character is. I mean, that's going to be a hard thing. I mean, did you try different versions of it? Did you just instinctually know where you were headed with it?
I read the scene and we did a table read. And I kind of, you know, I didn't really stray very much from the initial table read. I think that maybe if anything, I brought a little more of my own experience being on the show for 3 years. That emotion, I think, is what kind of I drew on to find it in the scene. And I just kind of had a sense enough of who Enoch was that I was able to just make choices as I went. I mean, I didn't really want to plan anything, you know. I wanted it to be as spontaneous and find those moments as truthfully as I could.
How cool is it to be part of the great Marvel universe? I mean, it must be pretty impressive. And you might be waiting for the phone call, be like, hey, we're doing another massive storyline, come back.
I mean, of course, that would be amazing. I feel like I'm after 3 years since we wrapped, I hope that they would still consider that. I'm not too long in the tooth for that, but I don't know. But I mean, if they were, I don't imagine that, you know, there's a place for Enoch in future Marvel world, but maybe, you never know. I'm not holding my breath about it. But we'll see.
Well, you also get to play another character that, in once again, in one of the biggest shows in a long, long time, Stranger Things season 4, which was this monumentally, massively popular show. I mean, considering it was streaming, it probably did bigger numbers than most network television shows.
Yeah.
And you play Wayne Munson. So how do you get involved with the show? And were you a fan of the show prior to getting the role?
I was a fan of the show. I watched the first season and I loved it. I didn't get back to it until I booked the role in 2020. And then I binged. I was like, oh, good. Now I have to watch the, rest of the show. It's work. So I have to watch it. So I didn't feel like I was just goofing off, but I binged seasons 2 and 3 and got caught up and loved it. And, you know, it was just that I had actually originally auditioned, for, I'm going to blank on the name of the character, the Colonel in season 4, who's played so beautifully by Augustus. I'm blanking on his name, but I had auditioned for that role and didn't get it. And Carmen Cuba, I guess, you know, was happy with what I did. She had me read for Wayne, and that one stuck, which was just a huge, you know, at the time it was like great to get a job, and I didn't really think too much about it. But then, you know, as it's been released and the reaction to everything, it's turned out to be a really great gig to get, and I'm really thrilled about it. And it's my first job on a streaming service too. I mean, every other gig I've had has been on network.
Yeah.
And so to get this was, as my agent said, it was like, this is a good one to get.
Yes, it is.
It's a nice one to start out with.
That's a bit of an understatement, I would imagine.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think one of the cool things about Wayne Munson, it's just been me as a fan, but I thought for a little while that they were going to go down the stereotype role of the character. You know, he's something like Trailer Park. He has this son that's kind of, you know, like rough around the edges kind of thing. I kind of figured, and it kind of made him grow. I was like, okay, he's going to be the standard, like abusive, aloof kind of guy. But obviously, they did the Duffer Brothers did a smart thing and they didn't go that route. So were, what were the early discussions like about Wayne Munson?
There were none. I those guys have their hands full, you know, and I think what they are able to do is like, you know, it was a self-tape that I did. It was COVID had just started. I sent in the self-tape and they were able to determine that, you know, I had what they wanted for the role. And they, you know, that's the thing. That's how it usually works. I mean, unless it's like a series regular or something where they, you know, they want to really sit down and have a conversation about it, they'll take the time. But for a role that's not as prominent, you know, they are just going to trust that the actor they hire is going to bring what they want. Mm. And, you know, I mean, you know, there may have been a couple of discussions here right before we shot, you know, of just like, well, here's the way we kind of want to shoot this. And we really liked what you did. If you can just, you know, kind of find, you know, reenact that, you know, like that's about as much as you get. Mm. They were, you know, super nice about it and very, you know, genuinely happy with the work that I did. I was really glad about that. But you know, I think it was like, the work is done in the audition. It really is so much of the time. And so I'd already done the work. And so I just showed up and I, you know, managed to tap into it again and find what I needed to find. I mean, which is, it actually becomes so much easier because they create the environment around you.
Right.
All you have to do is just sit and be, you know.
So when you explored the character, was there a point where you were thinking to yourself, you know, this guy that there was going to go down the road of stereotype, and instead you thought you're, you know, at the point where you realized, no, this is really a way more deeper character than you would think just looking at him on screen for a minute and go, oh, we know him already, that kind of thing.
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, for me, I don't know that I ever had an opportunity to make that judgment one way or the other, because I just read the scene that I was given to audition with. Mm. And I didn't have a, you know, a predetermined sense of like that he was potentially could be a stereotypical guy. I just saw the words on the page and I was like, oh, this guy is someone who cares about his nephew. Like, that's it. He's concerned about his nephew. He's been, you know, his nephew's been wrongfully accused of something and there's no proof about it. I just know my nephew. Mm. And I know he didn't do it. And like that was it for me. Like that was the connection that I needed to make. And, you know, whether or not he was a trailer park guy who like might have been abusive or, you know, an angry, bitter guy, which I think there is a little bit of angry, bitter in Wayne. But still, like, you know, the concern for his nephew overrides any of that stuff. And I love that they were willing to go there with the character.
Now, you know, when people love a character, when you can go online and see so much speculation about a character and an analysis on the character. And as I'm preparing for the interview, I'm going online, I'm looking through this analysis of Wayne from people online.
Yeah.
And one thing they picked up on, and I thought it was kind of interesting, there was a lot of speculation about the Southern accent and whether or not that implied that he was an outsider from Hawkins, at least either growing up or later in life, who returned. Yeah. So how important was that accent to understanding the character and how the town feels about Dwayne and Eddie?
You're talking about you mean the accent itself?
Right.
Yeah. You know, I don't know that it would have been critical. I just, my sense was the choice that I made, you know, was that, you know, that Wayne came from like pretty rural beginnings. And I just felt like that part of the country, he's going to have a little bit of a dialect there. And you know, I don't think he grew up necessarily in Hawkins. Mm. You know, it could have been that he, you know, moved there from a later date or he moved around. So, you know, picking up that kind of an accent, it wasn't, I don't think it was necessarily crucial that he had an accent. But if I was going to make a choice, it needed to be pretty accurate. I didn't want it to be, to come off as, you know, misrepresenting, you know, a place. and being bad.
So in your head, when you're developing this character for yourself, do you view Wayne as being just as much of an outsider as Eddie was in the community?
I absolutely. I think that is, you know, the thing that bonded us a lot. That's a really good question. I don't know that I necessarily made that as a conscious choice, but I think as you bring that up, I think that's a very good observation, because it, we live in on the outside of town, and we have probably had to keep to ourselves. And Eddie, my sense is he's going his own way. Wayne is more like, stick to where you're from, stick to your roots, do what you just keep your head down and do what you got to do. Whereas Eddie is like from that, but wants to break free of that, from what I can tell.
Mm. Now, and also, like, when you're thinking about Eddie, as far as your Eddie's uncle as Wayne, you must have had some thoughts too about the relationship between Wayne and Eddie. How good of a relationship did they have? Was he upset because of what happened, or did he just have that deep love, a familiar love with his nephew?
Yeah, I mean, some of the choices I made, because it was sort of all left up to, speculation. It wasn't something that we discussed, like, who were Eddie's parents? Didn't really talk about that. And I just thought, well, his parents, struggled and they're not around. You can kind of decide whatever you want to about, like, as far as what happened to them, but I'm his caretaker. I'm his guardian. And so that, I think, established that dynamic between us. And I understand and I probably saw a lot of crap that Eddie had to deal with growing up, maybe with whatever parents he had, probably some abuse, trauma. I saw that, and I think, I made it a mission for me as his uncle to protect him and shield him as best I could, and take care of him the best that I possibly could in the face of that. That's the choice that I made.
Right. And as a fan, I really wish there was scenes of Wayne and Eddie together. I do you wish that was, do you feel that like there was like a missing part of the characterization of both characters?
I wish that we could have had some moments together for sure, just from an actor standpoint. I don't know that it was really necessary, because I think that the relationship played itself out in between lines, throughout the season. But I would love to have had a scene with Joseph, because he's so damn good. I mean, he made him so beautifully.
Well, I think everyone who loves Stranger Things knows the scene we're about to talk about, which is one of the most powerful scenes, I think, in the entire series. The scene with Dustin Henderson's character, played by Gaten Matsurazo, I think is how you pronounce it. Yes. And that is such a powerful scene. So how difficult a scene was it to perform emotionally, and how long did you guys both spend preparing for it?
Gaten, I don't know exactly how much time he spent. I know that he came prepared and was fantastic. I mean, like, from the first time we rehearsed it, we really only rehearsed it maybe once or twice. And then blocked it, and that was it. And it's in the world of film and TV, I mean, you just kind of have to do your work and show up prepared and hope that the relationship finds itself in the moment when the camera's rolling. I mean, that's really how it worked. I mean, as soon as I got to meet Gaten, I mean, I'd already been a huge fan of his work on the show, and I knew, like, that he was capable of, bringing whatever needed to be found in the scene, and so I just trusted it, and he did. I mean, he just the way he told that story, like all I had to do was listen. I mean, really, and just know that, you know, I had a history with Eddie, and like that was, the scene was there, you know. It was really, so much of it is already done. As long as I can show up with, you know, my end of the deal. That's the cool thing about working on a good show, you know. You got great people around you.
Well, I mean, it really is a beautifully performed scene. The writing was fantastic. The acting was fantastic. And the scene does, it definitely has also length to it. And I think what I found kind of very impressive is how you build the scene, because it's an emotional scene for your character, but then also has to culminate when Dustin gives Wayne Eddie's guitar pick necklace, where that kind of hits the peak, the crescendo of the emotion, and then you go from there. So as an actor, how are you pacing yourself through that emotional arc up to the necklace and then trying to go past it?
I mean, you know, I would say that I'm trying, you know, the main thing is you don't anticipate, you know, you can't be expecting what's to come. And so you just have to kind of have your emotions on your sleeve so that they're there when they need to be. And as the actor, you know, I know that there's an emotional moment coming up, but I'm staying in the moment as much as I can. And my moment at the top of that, excuse me, is just, I'm, you know, I see the poster of Eddie and somebody's, you know, graffitied on it. And I'm upset about that. And that kind of feeds me in that moment. And my response to Gaten when he approaches is like totally irrational, but coming from a place of like, you know, you're just one of those kids and, you know, messing, screwing up my nephew. And so I just chose to play that. And then once you make a choice for one moment, the next moment can surprise you. And then you have a response for that. And then the next moment surprises you. So you play the surprise, you know, and that to me is kind of what drove that scene, I think. It was a nice arc to play.
It really was. I mean, that scene was talked about so much online. You did a wonderful job with that, I thought.
Thank you.
Oh, you're very welcome. So now that Stranger Things season 4 is done, everyone saw the scenes. So what was like being a part of that, the series for you? What was it like to be part of that, the excitement and that fandom, which has been somewhat ravenous since the series has ended?
It's been amazing. It's been great. You know, everybody that I got to work with on that show was just super professional and warm and inviting, and like just like had me in a stranger coming into, you know, their world, and they welcomed me as family, and that, you know, that sets the environment for great work. And so And it kind of stands to reason that, you know, they have the fans that they do, and the fans are appreciative of even the guys that come in and you know, play some of the smaller scenes, you know, and it's been wonderful, especially because, you know, my son, who you almost met there, he hasn't actually seen the show. I've shown him my scenes, but he's 10. So he, you know, he's not quite ready. Stranger Things, it's got some pretty intense stuff, but he has friends who've seen it, and so they talk about it, and he's gotten really into the actors. He watches, you know, follows them on online, and, you know, watches interviews with them, and you know, so it's been kind of, it's opened up a big world in our house, for sure. It's been pretty cool.
That's awesome. And I mean, there's a rumor that season 5 is going to have Eddie come back. Apparently there's some theories about how that's happening. You know anything? You seen those? And I must admit, they sound pretty impressive and possible.
So I like the fans, like, you know, some really creative people out there, all I can say. I don't know anything,
right?
And you know, so your guess is as good as mine, but some of the theories I think are interesting. And yeah, I mean, who knows? You know, I fantasize about maybe there being a place for Wayne in season 5, but I'm not going to hold my breath for that either. I don't know. it would be interesting, but and of course I would love to do it, but who knows?
I mean, it's pretty impressive. I mean, the Stranger Things fans are almost like the Star Trek fans, where every second of film is being analyzed and processed. And like I said, like the rumors of how Eddie would return, I mean, they sound plausible for someone who doesn't really know what they seem to know. But I can't help but think that Wayne makes sense in season 5. So hopefully you come back.
Yeah, exactly. We'll see. We'll see. And I would get to represent Eddie posthumously.
Right. So what's next for you?
This script right here, I'm working on a movie. It's currently called The Hirsch Project. And I start on September 1st, and we'll you know, go for like about, 3 weeks or so. And I'm excited about that. It's a fun role.
Very cool. So hopefully when you're ready to talk about it, you come back on the show. It's been a pleasure.
Yes. Thanks for having me. Good talking. You too. Thanks, man.